they were there for I don't know how long. See, Brockman started he worked down there by the mine, the copper mine down in
Kennecott?
Yeah, down there by McCarthy or whatever. Mm-hmm. And he was telling about some of the stuff they did there. Mm-hmm. And they homesteaded. He and Tilly homesteaded this. And Tilly worked in town. She worked for the school district for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if her employment at the school district was at the end or if it was in the beginning, because she ran the Peerless Cafe for a long time. And I remember her and Henry getting in a disagreement about something, and so she got the land up on the hill, and then she went up and built her house because the land is on.
It shows her with a quarter, and apparently he kept the other.
Well, I don't know for sure if she kept this or not. I don't know. But see, we got Henry C. and
M. B. Matilda.
Oh, Matilda.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Kobe Everhart was over there, where donkeys are now?
Yeah, Kobe just lived in that guy's house for a little while, and then he went outside to work for. He went out to drive a Greyhound bus.
Huh. He was just renting, basically?
I think he was. I really don't know for sure if
whose house was this?
He bought
Bonet's. Okay,
And Bonet went out, and he went to San Francisco, and he got stationed in San Francisco working for Pan American.
Oh, okay.
and she was a little short lady, and they only came up here when they were peddling something. They sold some here too many years ago. He still had some land, I guess.
Hmm.
And
well, that's quite a subdivision back in there now,
I guess. They built a monster place. Somebody built a house in there, it works for Alyeska.
Yeah.
Leroy did about $12,000 worth of dirt moving.
That was probably our ex-neighbor down here, Joyce Danielson and...
Oh, Joyce and somebody, yeah.
And I can't remember what her husband's name was now, but yeah, they built a monster house.
Monster place, yeah. I'd be afraid to build something that big,
they had a double garage you could roller skate in.
Well, the landscaping around there, he changed the hill there. I mean, thousands and thousands of yards he moved around there to make it so that I haven't been. I drove in there one time. I was just looking to see where roads went. I was up to Mrs. Parr one time, and then going up the same way I came in, I came down, and on Alice Road there's different places too.
Yeah, never been up there.
What you better if you go up there, you better have four wheel drive because I tell you what, I came out of Parr's place. I was slipping and sliding on the way down in. Then when I went to leave, thank goodness there was enough snow berm on the side of the road. It didn't. It's exciting going out in and out of that place.
When did the Wards show up here,
Wards are out there. Ward was out there. It seemed it seemed about 1957, 58, because it seemed to me it was after the fire went through there, 58, the fire went through in 58. Well, then he went out and he got somebody in there with a D9 and they knocked all those dead trees over. Huh. And Jim Day and Johnny Cole went in and cut a bunch. And I don't know, Charlie got to working for NC, who was trying to sell machinery. And I don't know, what... What transpired there, and then there was an Irish guy that bought that place after Charlie left. A McClean or something.
I don't ever hear it.
He was a mechanic. He worked for Yukon Equipment, and then he and his wife they parted company back in there too. I plowed out his road a couple of times and
incidentally, John Hewitt was saying that Carl Lindstrand had a Farmall tractor.
Yeah, he's got a big M, and it had a saw in the back.
Right.
And it was power takeoff, and he could go over to a place, and he would deliver the wood in 4 foot lengths, and then he'd go to town, and then they'd buzz it up if they right. wanted 12 inches or
16
or whatever, and he cut some for me one time. But to get him motivated was quite a deal. I'll go over the tractor, it'll start today. I don't know if I'll get started today. I might have to go to town. Carl's going to take me, or Everett is going to take me to town. And so I finally pinpointed him down to the fact that he'd come over. I had a bunch that I wanted to cut up, and I went and traded them firewood for sawing it, because I had these old chainsaws, and they weren't very swift, and when you could do it, zip, and he could move around, and when you got the one pile moved, you could just go to the next one, and I don't know, he finally got over there. We did about 10 cord that one day. I mean, once he got going, yeah, he had a tractor, and John Holmes had the first tractor with power steering, because he figured that when he's driving his tractor in the field, it was nice to be able to turn it easily. And his truck didn't have power steering, that he didn't have to drive. And the farmers all would put in a bid how much they wanted to sell their potatoes for. Well, then the co-op would put in a bid on the average,
mm-hmm.
and if somebody wanted to sell, you know, that at the price that they were bidding, well then they would give
the
them some.
Would accept.
Yeah, and a lot of them, you know, some of them would have a real low bid. Well, Carl would. He kept thinking, you know, they were going to pay $8 a hundred for him.
Now, which Carl is this?
Carl Herney.
Okay.
See, Walt didn't seem to mind what the price was, you know, because he worked 48 hours a week or more all the time, and he had the equipment, and I helped him a little bit, you know, I'd work up his ground for him or whatever, and then he'd let me. He let me use the tractor, and if it wouldn't have been for Walt and Dorothy, a couple of times I think that homestead would have been somebody else's. But I didn't want to walk 3 miles to tell anybody one night. And one night I was ready to give it away. The road was washed out in two places, and my car was on one side, and it wasn't getting any better. Everything I did went wrong. The jack, I had a flat tire on my truck, and it fell off of the jack and went way down in the mud, and I jacked it up and I almost got it out of the mud, and it fell over one more time, and I got the handsaw, a sweet saw, stuck in the tree, and then I broke the handle and the axe trying to chop it off, and I was quite a ways away from before, and I was trying to cut logs, and I was going to fill them in that ditch when the thing, you know. But see, the thing was, Walt and Dorothy came over that night when the road was closed, when it was washed out, and they drove up through the woods somehow, and I could hear this Jeep coming, making a lot of noise, and all of a sudden they came to the house, and they said, how did they get there, you know? And then Walt said, man, you make it hard to come to visit you guys.
behind your boat.
They were adventurous, you know, Walt and George Lyle.
Mm-hmm.
And they went up to the Chena Hot Springs on the winter trail one time. they went up there and they're going along and you know, there was lots of those alders and everything across the road and stuff. So they somewhere along the way, I don't know if someone had blazed the trail with a cat or something, you know, maybe Wilson, you know, he had a cat up there. And they were going along, and all of a sudden it sounded like a tire blew out. And they both stopped and looked. All the tires are good. And then after they got up to the, they were still trying to figure out why this tire was blown out. It was the one that they had mounted on the side of the Jeep, poked a hole in it, one of the sticks from the road, and it was really a poor tire, but it poked a hole through that thing and blew that tire out that they had mounted on the. I thought if anybody would want to write the Reader's Digest, that would be a story to put in something out of the ordinary that happened in Alaska. But I was never a literary person, and I wasn't.
Tell John Hewitt about it.
What?
Tell John Hewitt about it. That's his game. Well, Maddie was talking about all the old bachelors from around the neighborhood that sponged off Carl.
Yeah.
And the question that occurred to all of us was, well, how did they support themselves? Because there wasn't much talk of any regular work.
Sure. Well, The Kruger had this greenhouse,
and that supported him?
Well, I don't think it supported him, but he occasionally Carl had him do some stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. I think he just did busy work for him.
What did he heat the? What kind of fuel did he use?
Oh, he used he had the wood. He had a big old boiler in there that he bought from, and he burned wood in there.
Okay,
and he also burned coal. Mm-hmm. They got a stoker in there after a while. He had a stoker. But I think he it seemed like that greenhouse was about 24 by 24 or something. And he Carl used to raise a fair amount of vegetables, you know, they did. Mm-hmm. Well, Kruger raised radishes for Carl.
Oh.
Carl had the ground. And Kruger would do the radishes, and they sold them to the military.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember in 1953 and 1954, they did a lot of them. They sold a pile of them, and they had those wooden plywood, or you know, those little wire with a little skinny wood in it.
Okay.
Wire-bound baskets, wire-bound things,
right.
And they'd have those things full of radishes, and then they sold them in 25-pound bags to the restaurants, or they might have been a 25. I don't know. They were a pretty big bag. They were about the same size as a turnip bag, and they did zucchini and at one time the guys who got the zucchini on the market first got about 50 cents a pound for it.
Yeah.
They sold it for 79 in the store. Then when it went down to 39, they got 25 cents a pound for it. And gasoline was 28 cents a gallon or something, and everything else, the pickup wasn't much. And Lindstrand sold a fair amount of wood.
Yeah. Several of them obviously did that. Who was it you said took the wood down to the?
That was Adolf Scheer.
Mm-hmm.
And he bought that D2, and I tried to buy that when he settled his estate, and I did all the legwork on it, and some turkey at the bank bought it out from under me, and you know, I followed the trail with that caterpillar, because I did all the legwork, and I was down trying to get some money, and I made the mistake of telling him what I wanted it for, and they figured it would be $1,800. And that was a diesel at that time. It didn't have a blade on it, but the blade was, about $1,000 at that time. But it had a winch on it, and I thought, well, you know, it would be easy to drag wood out of woods with it or stuff, you know. And so I went down, and that cat got bought, you know, somebody, and that was sold within a week to somebody else. And it ended up down at P.R. Johnson, down on Johnson Road. It went from $1,800 to $3,600 in a period of 2.5 weeks or 3 weeks.
Wow.
It changed hands. And I went back, you know, and I told Johnson about it, you know, and I knew him. He grew certified seed potatoes on down on Johnson Road. And I was in there at his place, and I tell you what, I was there in the spring. And I thought I had mud at my place, but he had a lot more. We went in there and we took that tractor, and we had a go devil, and that's how we got to the root cellar. And the water was about this deep all over in the area, you know. We drove through this water to get to the root cellar. The root cellar was up high enough that the water didn't run in. And it was, and he had certified seed potatoes. And the people who inspected them, well, in the summer, there was nice, there's some nice ground down in there. There's a lot of other people that had homesteads down in that area. They had big hay fields down there. And a little bit beyond that, Johnson Road there, we found peat up in the hillside there, up on the top of the hill there, beyond Johnson Road. We were down there hunting peat because we were bidding on a job at Eielson, and we were trying to figure out where we would get peat from. Because it's 26 miles there, and this, well, Johnson Road, it wasn't much different. You know, it was 35 miles, so, you know, and the only thing is this peat moss down here, they weren't quite as high price for it. Mm. And I can't remember Miller, who had the truck in Miller, what was his name? Alaska Truck Grain Rental. Doug Miller, and he had a bunch of land out there by one thing over from Van Horn. He had a big old gravel pit in there.
Oh, okay.
And he had monster, and there was a lot of soil in there that was pretty nice looking stuff with some peat mixed in it. And if you run it through a blender, it looked like choice merchandise, you know. And it worked pretty good. And it had just enough sand in it so that it wasn't sticky and not much clay. And if you're doing it for a yard, you know, for lawn, a little bit of clay didn't matter because it would help hold the moisture. But it had a little tendency to dry out. When it dried, the ground would crack.
Right.
When you made it wet, it would swell up, and then when it got dry, it would. But once you got the grass growing in it, but anyway, we went down looking at it because we were trying to figure out some way to bid on it, and then ended up whoever got the job that time, they just took existing material from down in that area, so we never did pursue that thing too much.
This was after you were in the landscaping business?
Well, I did a little bit, you know. The greenhouse thing, you know, I was selling the homes. Mm-hmm. And by the 1st of June or the 10th of June, we had everything delivered to them. We didn't have anything at home, and the only thing we did our garden stuff. The one year we went overboard, we did six... almost 7,000 cauliflower plants.
Yep, never hearing
it. And I sold them, most of them, to Safeway. I went down to, when I tried to sell stuff to Safeway, because we were selling to the other stores, radishes and a little bit of that, I went to Safeway and the guy said, well, you have to talk to the manager. So I went and talked to the manager, and the guy said, you gotta give me 10 good reasons why we should buy from you. And I said, oh, I can do better than that. I had 42 checks written out for Safeway, most of them in the $100 category. I bought groceries about once a month, and I had a lot of checks. So I showed them. I showed them how many of them I had and
how much
I had spent there. Well, then, you know, it wasn't so hard to break in. And then I had a good relationship with the guy in the produce section. And they were the only ones where the produce guy didn't leave town.
Hmm.
All the other stores, produce guy had worked in there for a little while and gone. They'd go down to Anchorage. They would leave Fairbanks and they'd go to Anchorage. Well, they'd get a job down there because Anchorage was needing produce guys. Well, they'd go down there for a while, and then they'd find out how much it costs to live in Anchorage. And then they'd have a new one again. And so you'd have to get to renew your relationship with all of them. Well, about the time I went to work for Consolidated, I didn't have time to go do this greenhouse thing. So I the one year I still was doing stuff. So what I did was, I made a deal with Russ Wood, or Mrs. Russ Wood, and I said, "You guys have got your foot in the door, and I'll give you a billing book. You put it on a separate billing book, write it up. It's like it's yours, and then just take 20% off when they pay you, and that would be for your handling charge for going there." Well, she said, "That's too much." And I said, "No, it isn't." I said, "That's what you got to get." So I made the agreement. And well, after a while, she said, "You know, that was good. It helped them get into the store with a few more items. And if they were bringing them radishes, well, they might take another 10 or 12 bales of potatoes that they were trying to get rid of." So it was a good thing for us. And I'll never forget the guy that was the produce buyer at Safeway about that time. He said, "We finally got a guy that can bring in zucchini as nice as yours." I said, "Oh," I said, "Yeah, well, see, I must have showed somebody how to do it." I didn't say anything. So then one night he's out at Russ Woods and I'm delivering zucchini squash. Well, see, I had so many zucchini squash that I could only pick out the choice ones. I threw the other ones on the side of the garden because it looks so nice when they're all uniform.
Mm-hmm.
And people are a little bit pleased if you can give them a quality product every time, you know.
Sure.
And in order for me to get into the store, I sometimes would have to go take all their little crummy ones that were wilted and everything else, put them on the scale, throw them in the garbage, and give them other ones, and then I'd have mine in there. Well, then they would sell. So, but you had to work at it in order to.
Wasn't this guy that wrote the book Safeway? Wrote the book about produce? Wasn't he in Safeway?
Food Lion.
Oh, I'm mistaken then.
No, it's not Food Lion. It's Fred Meyers. Fred Meyers.
Oh, yeah.
That's the produce book?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's Fred Meyers in Anchorage.
Well, excuse me. I thought he was a Safeway produce man.
While I think of it, and has nothing to do with zucchini, how did they haul two things, hay and wood, to town? And what time of the year did they do it?
The hay was usually the only hay that they hauled to town. You mean from the farms around here?
Out of this
meadow grass. Well,
most of that stuff was early on. They had old army 6x6s. They bought old surplus. Lindstrand had one of them old 6x6s. Oh, and Kruger had one too, and he hauled wood too. Kruger hauled wood too, and Kruger would get a little bit of money. He worked on those old engines, You know, they were, I forget what engines they were, but he worked on that kind of stuff, you know, and he'd put rings in those old 6x6s, that's what they called them. Mm-hmm. And the potatoes, when they hauled the potatoes, when they hauled them to the military, George Dornath had a truck that belonged to Dan Hartman.
Huh.
Dan Hartman had a flatbed truck that he bought one time from somebody. I don't know what, he loaned somebody some money one time and that guy couldn't pay, so he got this, you got a yellow winged one there.
Fox wings, yeah, they've been around lately. There's a whole bunch of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, George Dornath used to use furniture pads, and he'd line that truck with furniture pads, and they would stack the potatoes in, and then they'd cover over with furniture pads, and then over the very top of the truck they would put a tarp, and then they'd deliver out to Wainwright or to Eielson, and they'd go in the building and they'd back the truck in and offload it one bag at a time. Nothing was palletized because nobody had a forklift anywhere, and they would deliver them, and they accepted potatoes 5 ton at a time.
Hmm.
And he'd go out there, and most of the time with the 5 ton on the truck, he was overloaded. But in the winter, most of the potatoes were done in the winter, and hardly ever the scale was open, and I don't know that they ever stopped anybody, but he was the one who hauled. And see, most of those guys had their potatoes in a root cellar, you know, and then they'd have to plow the, if they picked them up. Now, Carl had his own root cellar, and I washed potatoes in 55-gallon barrels. You know,
this is Carl Herning you're
talking about. Yeah, yeah.
Because he uses that same thing now, well, he uses it for school bus garage.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, he used it for school bus already, but then he dug out back into the hill a lot more. And
oh, that's right.
He extended that. He extended that, and he got all the nieces and nephews over, I mean nieces over, nephews over there to do the work for him. And his house at one time didn't have a very big a basement. He had a little bit of a basement in his house, and they undermined that whole house, dug it all out, and carried it out wheelbarrow at a time, and took it on the way out of his driveway off to the left and just stacked it up there, and they hauled it. Harold made a root cellar. Harold made a root cellar over in his place by pouring a slab of concrete on the ground, a monster slab of concrete with lots of steel in it, and then they went in and dug it out underneath that. he and somebody else, they dug it all out and hauled it down over the cliff. They hauled it out, you know, over the edge. They went in there, and Harold was on the wheelbarrow too.
Oh, he would be, yeah. Why don't you dish up some soup there?
You think that I'm going to pet you even if I don't?
Yeah, yeah, now that you've been in the house for a while, you're okay.
Am I okay then, huh?
Yeah.
Well, it was, it, you know, they... We did some things, you know, pretty stupid in our younger days. But, you know, sometimes if you didn't have money, you had to do what you could, you know?
Yep, that's what everyone did. Ackerman's. John Hewitt said he had a kind of a little sawmill out there or something.
Well, it wasn't, the sawmill was out at Ackerman's place, but it belonged to...
Fassler. Oh, okay, yeah.
It was out at his place.
Mm-hmm.
Because the reason it was out at his place is because there were logs that were still available close by.
Mm-hmm.
And Fassler didn't have to haul the logs very far. And Fassler went down and saw them, you know, and you'd see him go down with his crawler tractor.
Right.
And he'd go down there and then... He had a blue devil. Well, then the lumber was down there, And I don't know what Ackerman did, but I think he worked for the school system, or I don't know.
No one seems to.
Well, and that. You know, and then there was Al went out there. He homesteaded. He had a homestead out there or what, but he raised chickens out the road a little bit further.
That Wendt, W-E-N-D-T, or
yeah,
something like
Al,
that?
Yeah, Al and... They were up here last summer. I saw them up here last summer. They had come back, and he was the guy who parachuted on the ice floe when they had that ice island up here above Barrel.
Yeah.
T3.
Yeah, one of those.
Right.
He went up. He was the guy that parachuted down, and he run the cat down there, and made the runway so they could land an airplane. they dropped that, D4 or whatever with a parachute onto the ice, and he was the guy who parachuted in and made it work. He was a heavy equipment operator.
I guess he was.
He did putting down the hill there on those. Oh my gosh! I'll tell you what, that looks so dangerous.
Would you have some more coffee, or there's
no,
some
I got
juice?
I got enough coffee. I
well, that's I, gotta
at
be
noon,
pretty cool.
I don't drink coffee at noon. I drink coffee in the morning.
I understand that. Yeah.
And I used to drink coffee at 10, sometimes at 10 o'clock break I'd drink coffee, but in the afternoon I could care less about coffee. That was
well,
the least of
Well, what about
of my...
something else? Al's got milk, he's got fruit juice.
No, don't bother. Just a glass of water.
Okay.
That's all the heck I need at night.
All right.
Well, anyway, the...
Put this over here where you can reach it and you need to get on.
12 o'clock?
Yeah, we're sort of right on time.
The guy he's really on the stake here. Bell's ringing and it's on the table.
What? Okay. This is potato soup. It's probably a little different from any you've had.
He went and peeled the potatoes very carefully.
Yeah, I got him well trained.
Everybody was on strike that time, and so my brother-in-law had taken some really bad alcoholic and straightened his life around, and this guy's mother deeded him a piece of property out there near the airport, a little chunk of ground. It was an acre, or acre and a half, or 2 acres, or whatever. I don't know. It was a they had acquired it some way, and they didn't need. They it was out there in the brush. It was out there among all the. It was among the. It was out there among the cottonwoods and stuff out there. And anyway, we went out. He didn't have a house, and so he wanted to build a house out there. So I had worked for a construction company, and there was a kind of an old caretaker guy that lived there at the church. He had a little room down in the basement of the church somewhere that was his, and he did some of the maintenance around there, and he made sure that the ashes got out of the furnace, and I don't know what he did to make a living. I mean, he did some carpentry work, and so he and I went out and we staked out this place. You know, we went out and found where the property was, and then we got, my brother-in-law said, well, go get somebody in there and dig a basement, you know, get the basement dug. And so I called up Mitchell Truck and Tractor. This young Garrity come out there with this big old D8 on the back of a Tilt-Top trailer, 18 years old, and I thought, oh my gosh, what did I do? And you know, he dug that basement, and he had that basement within an inch of being level. He dug it out. It cost $67.50 to get that dug that time. charged me 2 hours of cab time at $25 an hour, and half an hour for travel time. And we had a basement dug for $67.50. Then my friend that was in the Army, he came and helped me, and we put a foundation in and laid up the blocks. And we were hauling blocks from the block plant, you know, whenever we went out. And one night, W.R. Skelton was the police chief for a little while. And he came over with his gun drawn. He says, "I caught you in the act, stealing blocks." So then we were a little bit excited. The gun pointing at us, you know. And he's the police chief. And so we called up the block people, you know, and Bill whatever his name was, who was the manager or whatever for the block company. He came over and looked it over and said, "Oh," he said, "yeah," he said, you better watch it. Those guys already got 1,400 hauled. I was out there the other day. They already got 1,400. What happened? How come you didn't catch them before now?" See, I had a car and we had a little old trailer. We couldn't haul too many at a time. We mixed up our mud by hand, you know, and we laid out that basement, you know. That building was a L-shaped basement. And then once we got the blocks up, Orland had gotten some lumber from somewhere, you know. It was used lumber, but it was good stuff. And so they got the floor joists on there when they went out there, and I don't know who all helped, but we got the floor joists down, and then they brought three-sided logs. We got one load, you know, and then we started, and between Carl telling us about how we should do that, and this
Carl Harding?
Yeah, and we strung two wires, we glued them, put them together, electric, you know, the 212 wire. We went over and attached onto some guy's trailer over in that Golden North Motel is. Now, there was a few trailers in there and a couple of concrete igloos. And we piped our electricity over there from that point. It was one of those rolls of wire would just barely reach to the edge of the building, 250 foot. So we spliced two together so we wouldn't have so much of a drop.
Were you and Greta married then?
Yeah. No, not in 53. I wasn't. I was up here by myself. So then we got those logs up, and nothing flat, you know. And so Orland called up the guy and said, "Well, we need to get some more logs." And so the guy says, "Well, it's hunting time now." He says, "I won't be able to." He says, I don't have anybody to help me. He says, "It takes two more guys." Orland says, "What time do you want them? I'll have you two guys down there." And the guy says, "Well, we'll start at 7. And so we went down there 39 mile on Richardson, and the guy, sure enough, he was ready to go. So we sawed enough logs to finish that house on the L-shaped house.
Right.
And we got big logs, and so we took them back, loaded them on a big old truck. He had a big old International. We had the box on it, was about 16-foot log, and we had some 20-foot logs. They hung out over the edge, and we piled them on as high as the box and hauled them over there. He put a couple of straps on, and we put them on the floor, on the subfloor, so that we didn't have to pick them off of the ground. And we had to put them, you know, a couple places, you know, because they were terrible heavy. We didn't want to have the floor break down. So we stacked them in a couple places. And then that afternoon and evening, we peeled on them suckers until 2 in the morning. And we started at 7 down there, and we worked till 2 in the morning. But we were pitch, you know, all on our legs. And see, there was only one side to peel, but this Mr. Reynolds, took his tri-square, and he marked all of them so that when we peeled, we would peel to a certain line. So each log, when they were cupped on the edge, mm-hmm. they would touch each other. You know, in other words, one didn't stick out further than the other ones. So we had to peel back into there to make them all the same. Right. And they were eight inch logs, 8 inches high, and 6 inches to the other way. And they were about four, you know, where the narrowest part was. And every one we peeled to that dimension. So we had these big knots. He had a chisel that was about this long, the metal part of it, and about that broad, and it weighed about 20 pounds. And if you had one of those bad knots on there, you'd go, whap, and off you'd come. And so then when we laid them out on the floor, we took this electric, we had a big drill, and we would drill a hole big enough so that when we drove the spike down in it, that in case the log would shrink or something, it could slide on there. Mm-hmm. It just kept it from tipping over. So we went ahead and did everything, you know, up through to where the windows and everything were. You know, we just went across them a couple times where we didn't want to waste the big picture window. We just went. We only did it a couple places mm-hmm. to make it so they stayed solid. And Carl showed us how to get the corner straight. We stuck a log up in the corner, a short one, mm-hmm. and then built to it. We had mm-hmm. it braced from this side, and
right.
so we had the right length every time. You know, we didn't have to find out where it was sticking over. So it was, we had people tell us, you know, and then they got the thing on the roof. But when he got it on the roof, that's when I went out and started helping dig potatoes. We did a lot of money.
But is that house still there, or what happened to it?
They sold the property and they moved the house over behind down at University Avenue. If you you know, just a little bit further down University Avenue than the entrance to Fred Meyer's there. The bank entrance there.
Mm-hmm.
They moved it over there. They moved it over there.
And there's only one. Oh, was it off of University Avenue or off
no,
of the street?
No, it's off.
Back
it's
of,
back in. You know,
when you drive into Freddy's
mm-hmm.
from University Avenue and look over the fence, there's a log building back there.
Oh. Well, point it out the next time we're...
Yeah, I only saw it one time, and I wasn't paying attention. Mm-hmm. I think that was before Fritz was there. So I, you know, but anyway, they moved it over there. Donnybrook bought the property from her mm-hmm. because they wanted that her piece of ground there mm-hmm. for easement purposes. Well, she had a house built then in North Pole, and so this has transpired, you know, over the years. And her husband died in 1961, that year the bitter cold was here. Right after he died, her well quit running water, too. With eight kids. And we went and drove a well in the basement in that house. It was 45 or so below zero when we started, and I don't know how cold it got. It got colder by the night was over. And we had to cut these pieces in short pieces so we could drive them down.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, I tell you what, that was. I was so happy to see water coming out of the faucet when we got done.
You were just driving it by hand?
Yeah, we had a big old weight, and we picked it up, yeah. wah, you know. Well, you got to get it up, and we had a pulley. We'd pull on it and drop her down. And, you know, most of the time you can at least do a half a length of pipe or so, but this one here, we had to do it in the basement, and the basement wasn't, you know, we had the floor joists to deal with.
Headroom.
Would you have some more soup?
No, I got plenty. I took too many crackers.
Oh, well, you don't have to eat them all.
That's all right.
I'll feed him to his room.
Yes, then. But that was an experience, you know, trying to drive a well at, I mean, it wasn't frozen or anything, but inside of a building, it's a little bit of a deal. And I had a thread cutter and a, you know, a pipe deal, you know, and a couple of pipe wrenches. And we did the first well. we put that well down out there before they started building. And we got
one that well was inside the building.
Yeah.
Right.
We went and put that well in there, and we went down to independent lumber, you know, independent rental, or somebody like that, and we rented a big pump. We rented a big pump, and we pumped that water out of that well to see. And what happened was that water, we run it into the forms that we had, you know, the concrete forms. And we had enough water that we had the water going all the way around the forms and running over the forms, so we could see if our forms were level. We didn't have a level. I mean, a instrument level. We had a hand level and a string level to hang on the wire. But when we laid up the concrete blocks, I saw where some people just used a. Oh. You know what happens when my sister does that? She comes over toward them once more. Water.
I don't have that trouble.
Anyway, we did that place over there, and once they got the roof on, you know, well then. That's as far as he could go that winter.
Yeah.
See, he was a veteran. He was a veteran, and so was my sister.
Oh, she was.
So they were waiting on a VA loan to build their house. So they worked on it the next year then, and it was it was a challenge, you know, to do some of this stuff at times.
Yeah.
Sure was. Yeah, it was exciting at times when you haven't been brave enough to buy any of these yet.
I approach them with great caution. These actually had a little bit of softness to them on the shelf. Usually they're cast iron on the shelf. You bring them home and they gradually ripen, and then there's that.
And then they're rotten.
Six of them
was a produce guy too.
Hempel's
a familiar name now.
Well, yeah. Hempel is right there. You know where the fire department is on the Steese Highway? I mean on the Farmer's Loop.
Farmer's Loop, yeah.
Hempel Homestead was.
I've seen the road sign.
There's a little sign there,
right.
Hempel.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I went out there one time, and you know, lo and behold, they had onions, green onions they were growing there in that field, and they had 200 or 300 bunches that particular day when we were out there. And neat little onions, you know, just hotter than blazes. But they were pretty. They were pretty, and they were growing them out there in the field. And I saw John Holmes had he must have had a quarter acre of tomatoes one year, or maybe an acre. He bought tomato seed from every imaginable place. And he had 10 acres of cabbage one year, but he raised the cabbage for the military, and Dornath hauled it, and they used to bag it up, and they sold a bunch, and I can't remember how that went at one time, but he watered that. He went down there and he pumped water out of Columbia Creek. And Henry Gettinger's father-in-law had that homestead there where that gas trial thing is.
Max Douglas, this
one. Yeah, Douglas's place. And they had they were growing radishes down there, right about where all that test site is, and that little creek run by there, and they had a little radish harvester, and it would dig the little things out and bring them up to the top, and then you'd stop the thing and get a bunch off or something, and had a rubber band on there, and you were trying to as you were digging them, you know. And it was good if they didn't have wormy ones, you know, but then afterwards they would put four or five extra ones in, and then they just pinch off the bad one. And I remember them greeting them too. You know, I saw them. Well, see, Henry worked for the co-op for a while, and he was their salesperson, you know, delivering the potatoes to the different stores and stuff through the co-op. I don't know if it was the Matanuska co-op that he was working for, or if it was the other one.
Oh, we ought to talk to him one of these days.
Yeah, he would. He could enlighten me about a lot of this stuff. And the co-op also sold a lot of feed at one time. You know, for the people who had cows and chickens, and I remember having to go out there in the warehouse. Here we are working in the ice cream plant, and then they have to go out there, and somebody have to go get a bag of feed out of there, and you carried it, you know, away from your body so you didn't get any of the mash that was coming out the holes
into the ice cream.
So it was I had a good job down there. It was a great job because I went to work at 5 a.m, and I was done by 1 o'clock, But then when Dar Honey quit, well, then this other guy that was there, he said, well, we got to sell more ice cream. We got to make more ice cream. And so then I'd have to work later in the day. And then by the time we were doing that, then I was the only guy there to give breaks on the machine. See, whereas if they did the ice cream and they were done by 2, the guy that was doing the ice cream could go and give the guys breaks. Mm. One of the guys in the break would give the guys breaks, and as soon as they had their breaks over with, then they would go back and clean up the ice cream place. Well, he said the night crew can clean up the ice cream room, you know. Well, they had a night crew that came in, but a lot of times they'd bottle, and then they'd have to work overtime to get the, and then by that time sometimes they didn't clean it as good as it should, you know. Well, then the inspector would come around and he'd stick a little light in there and it would get the pretty color that there was bacteria in there. And they would, and that batch that they did that day had to go away. Oh, gosh. Well, then they would test that batch. Well, I don't believe that the batch was bad because it didn't get dirty until after the and so I worked on there, and then then we lost the ice cream contract. We had the slice contract with the military.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we were doing those slices and the carnation must have had in. On what they were bidding because they bid 1 mil less than a, you know, on each quart of ice cream. 1 mil.
And Art Sexauer raises his fine hand, huh?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think what he did, I think he took that manager out, got them drunk, and then they discussed the finances.
Written out in the lease. What's going on, huh? Did you run the Ravens off?
I worked for him for a while down there at the. He bought into that Union Oil down there at. He was the consignee for a while. I couldn't imagine him being the consignee because he didn't know a quart of oil from a gallon of gas or a gallon of milk. But evidently he had the, you want to turn these lights out here so that we don't burn a hole in the daylight? Where do they turn off?
Okay.
I
hadn't even noticed.
Well, you know, I looked up there and I thought, well, it was an experience at times, you know.
Oh, yes. Well, just living here is an experience.
Well, you know, we did. There were some things that were big improvements, and I think the biggest improvement was when the flood came.
Yep.
That got the banks thinking a little bit, because their little prima donna property downtown got their thermostats rinsed off. Some of this land out here was a little more valuable, you know?
That's for sure. Everybody moved out of town.
Well, I got turned down. I got turned down on trying to drill a well, you know. Man, they loaned money on the Cadillac, you know, at the same time.
Yeah.
And the revolving loan fund, which was supposed to help these people in agriculture, it just put some of them in such a bind that they hardly got out of it. They would only, well, most of the time the people didn't realize the cost of financing things. And then the wisdom of the Department of Agriculture wanting milk parlors for four or five cows or something, or 20, that was a thing. And having stainless steel, you know, we grew up in a country where they had milk cans, and they stuck the cans in the water, and they run cold water over them and cool them off, and a lot of people, they made cheese out of it, and it was good. But they went at this thing up here, and as long as, and when I got fired down there, I told one of the guys on the board down there in Palmer, I said, if you leave that guy up there, I says, your doors are going to go shut. And they didn't believe me, because he would buy cottage cheese, and instead of buying it on, getting it on a Wednesday, or ordering it on a Wednesday and getting it Thursday, he would get it on Saturday. Well, if it didn't get in, by Monday, the military didn't want to buy it. Well, at one time when Heine was there, if that happened, he'd go down to Lindy and say, hey, I'll give you this cottage cheese at X number of dollars. But this guy, instead of doing that, he'd just leave it sit there, and if it didn't go to if they couldn't get full price at the stores, after it expired date, he'd put it in the garbage. The Zula fed his pigs, fed four pigs on cottage cheese one year, you know, stuff like that.
This was a relative of somebody who said this.
Yeah, time. He was the son of one of the board of directors down there. And I talked to another one down there, and I told him, I said, some people are going to say that I was just a disgruntled guy because he fired me. And I didn't get fired because I didn't do my work. His excuse was that I was selling produce and I wasn't selling it through the co-op. I sold a little, a few boxes of potatoes for people who wouldn't eat Alaska potatoes. And I would give them a box of potatoes. I forget, I had 30 pounds in there, and I think I charged them $3 or something for them. And I said, you don't pay for them until if you like them, you pay me for them. If you don't like them, you don't have to pay me. And I got paid for every one of them. But I promoted Alaska potatoes. You know, in 1953, they had a potato out that, I tell you what, you put it in the pan without water, and you could drain water off of it. They had that
big battle going on, because nobody knew how to cook Alaska potatoes. They all went to mush.
Well, that Kinnick one was the one that was the worst one. And they got this big, and you put them in a kettle, and lo and behold, if you had one of them waterless cookware, you could cook them in there And it would be a little bit like flour and water in
the pot. Paste.
Little bit, maybe even a little cornstarch or something in it. But it was really bad. And I remember Maddie Lee Herning cooking some of potatoes that they fixed us a meal when we were digging the potatoes. And those potatoes were pretty sticky, mm-hmm. you know. And I don't know exactly what, you know, but they got better, especially those that were grown on higher ground. Over out there on North Pole, that Ford had a big homestead out there at North Pole. And the potatoes were so full of scab that you couldn't see the potato. You know, it was in the ground out there. Walt Everhart had a little patch in one of his fields where the water got caught from a berm pile. And right below that, there was some scabby potatoes. And I think on our hill over there, it all drains down the hill. We've never had a scabby potato there. And I've always used certified seed,
right.
Except the first couple of years when I didn't know about certified seed. But as soon as I knew about it, I bought certified seed. And so I got, you know, a person gets all kinds of stuff to deal with, you know. I'll never forget, they were taking those potatoes in the root cellar, and the motor had quit on that conveyor. And they brought out a new motor for that Ford guy. And they put this other motor on, and it was a 3400 instead of a 1700. And that belt went so fast that it couldn't go off. Every once in a while, they go,
yeah.
And it rubbed the scab right off on those potatoes. And, you know, those healed over, and you could hardly see they had scab on them. he had about 12 or 15 ton in that one bin, and you could, you know, they looked just looked like somebody had rolled them across the yard. And you know how you take a new potato and you have a pair of gloves on with mud on, and you go like this real hard, and all the stuff comes off. Well, that's the way they all looked in there, you know. Sure. After a while, when they healed,
he managed
to get rid of those. He got rid of those potatoes. Walt and I, we couldn't even lift ours when we were watching this thing spin. Walt and I, we hauled potatoes into the red cellar that night too.